Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
And following on from this week's Mental Health Monday with Dr. Pragya, we have Mental Health Extra with Jake Mills from Chasing the Stigma back in the studio for 2019. Happy New Year to you, Jake.
Happy New Year.
Here we are, 2019. We're here. We made it.
It doesn't feel like New Year was like a year ago. It was. But doesn't it feel like it was ages ago? Because we're still saying Happy New Year to people. And when's the cutoff?
I think for a lot of people, this is the first sort of week back in work. Mm. So it's kind of it's just like a polite thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah. So basically the end of this week, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wish you a Happy New Year, but I'm thinking, you know, something that'll set aside. This is an intro that will be different from other intros as well. I want to talk about sort of mental health in the new year as well. I noticed that sometimes people at the end of the year do this thing where they assess the year on social media and they kind of go, oh, 2018 was a bad year for me, or 2018 was a good year for me. And I always wonder, always concerns me that people... it's not about hope, because hope is an endlessly positive thing as well. But sometimes people say, oh, I hope 2019 is better than 2018. But then there's an expectation that a year might bring with it different, maybe, fortunes. But, you know, fate and, you know, the pathway that you're on, I guess, doesn't care what date it is in the diary. And if the situation changes, and if it's, you know, personal situation or something that's going on in your life, if you're not changing that, then there's a risk that 2019 just follows on from 2018. Because if nothing has changed, the fact that the date has changed in the diary actually doesn't make any difference to people.
Yeah, you know, I think from a personal point of view, I felt like Christmas and New Year was a bit weird this year. I don't know whether the weather was different. It was a little bit warmer this year. I didn't really get the sense of Christmas and New Year this year. And it was on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. And me and my wife we spoke to each other and we both kind of agreed that we didn't want 2018 to end. 2018 for us, it was a fantastic year. You know, it was the year we got married. I started working for charity full time. A lot happened in that year. And it was kind of, for us, we were like, well, it doesn't have to end here. And then a new year starts, you know, this can just roll on. And I think there's a lot of pressure that comes with a new year at times. And from a kind of a mental health and particularly from a suicide point of view as well, a lot of people think that Christmas is the most difficult time for people. But there's more suicides around New Year than it is actually Christmas. And for a lot of people, looking at a new year is a kind of a sense of, I've got to get through a whole new year now. It's this idea that one has come to an end and now a whole new one starts. And that's kind of how a lot of people look at it and say, new year, new me, and, you know, this is the year I'm going to do all this. But to a lot of people, it's just Tuesday, you know, it's just another day. Let's just carry on. And so I think there's a lot of pressure that comes with that about New Year's resolutions and what are you going to do. And there's a whole lot of thing about, like, challenges that you're going to do and, you know, all these kind of things that you have to be able to achieve. And there's a whole lot of pressure that comes with that. So I think it's just kind of, let it be whatever it is for you, and to realise that not everyone has that same type of approach to it.
I remember I must have been in early 20s, would have been sort of 05, 06 or something like that. And I remember being, New Year's Day, I felt like overwhelmed. I'd probably had too many drinks the night before, and then it got to the 1st of January, and I remember just thinking, oh my word, like what, like... Because it's that thing where you can't even think of anything that actually happened between January and, what, the Grand National. That's like the first thing for a lot of people. And it felt like this whole year had sort of opened up like a huge chasm in front of me. And I remember at the time thinking, I feel like I think at the time, like if I could check back now through my diaries, I used to write, like, fill every single little spare page of a diary with stuff to keep, like, to write everything down. I remember looking at the diary thinking, I can't even imagine that this is ever going to be full. Just because it felt like the whole... like I couldn't even imagine what I'd be doing in like 3 weekends' time, having just come from a period where every single minute of every single day is set aside with things you need to do, deadlines you need to set before Christmas is up, work shift and patterns over the work, you know, social occasions where you meet certain things, certain people, family occasions, so on. And suddenly it was just, boom, next year. 2007 or whatever it was.
And I think it is because of that period as well, especially the build up to Christmas and then that bit in between. That's a bit of a kind of, it's like a black hole that a lot of people can kind of fall into, and you don't know what day it is, you don't know what's going on. Everything that you've basically worked on for that whole year is lost in that space. Sometimes I quite like that time in between, because you can reflect and you can think of different things that you have done. And I think, you know, look at all the things that you've achieved this year and last year. And it's hard sometimes to actually sit back and look at it. And I think no matter what anyone's going through, to be able to reflect on how far you've come, whether, you know, you're going through a hard time or a good time, to be able to reflect on the small things that you've done as well is really important to do. And sometimes it can be in that space, but also that time can be quite, and that change to routine can be quite hard for some people as well. So it's important that we're kind of really kind of focusing on that mental health side of things now, and looking into the new year, and but especially this beginning of the year. As you know, it was coming up to a year since we'd done a 24-hour show, because that's Blue Monday, as they call it, which is apparently the most depressing day of the year, which is coming up in 2 weeks' time, third Monday of January, yeah, isn't it? And so, you know, so this is a really important time.
People keep asking, by the way, we're not doing another 24-hour show. No. We're going to do something which hopefully will tie in with episode 100 of Mental Health Monday, which will be at some point sort of beginning to middle of February. The whole Blue Monday thing isn't really a thing. We just used it as a thing because we thought that's a good way of starting the year, setting our stall out. And that's what we did.
Yeah.
But I don't know if my wife now with, we had a baby in 2018. So whether or not, if I just go, yeah, I'm not coming home that night. Might get into trouble. I put on social media, is anyone thinking of doing anything to improve their mental health? I quit one of the social medias.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, you know what, I don't need to do that anymore. And also I got the ukulele that I was after for Christmas.
Yeah.
So I'm going to learn to play that. Already picking up a good few chords. Mm-hmm. My strumming's all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite ironic. That's good for your mental health. And I imagine absolutely woeful for your wife's mental health.
Steve says, Mick, I packed in Facebook about a month ago. Not missed it one bit. I wasn't on it a lot, but I felt like I'd be missing out if I deleted it. Just a picture of myself, 14 pounds heavier than in August, inspired me to get back to the gym. Nothing to do with a new year, just a lifestyle change. Gibbo says, Mick, I'm attempting the Mind Charity Red January, although he was only at the early start of that one as well. I'd put as well that I feel like I should start running, just because, like, if someone said run a marathon, I'd be like, not even nearly. But like, even like a 10K, I'd be thinking, Could I walk 10? Like, do I regularly walk 10K? It's only 6 miles. I could probably do that pretty straightforwardly. But could I run it? Absolutely no chance. Haley says, Mick, come and join my running club, the Kirby Milers. You won't regret it. The most supportive club ever. All abilities, and my running is the best thing to help me balance my stress. Also, try and walk to get you started at your local Croxteth Park Run. They do a Saturday morning, 9 o'clock. So I'll give them a mention. The Kirby Milers. Kirby Milers. AC. If you type that into Twitter, you can find out all about there. They were the club of the year at the Merseyside Community Awards 2015 and 16. So Hayley, more than happy to give them a plug now. Are you going to do anything different in 2019?
I think I'm just going to get back on track, and, you know, everything that you basically lost over Christmas, and particularly...
gained.
Well, yeah, exactly. getting back into that routine. Without falling into the trap of saying about, you know, go for a run to help with your mental health, because that's not for everyone. But personally speaking, I find that going for a run really does help me. And do you know what? It probably is more so, well, it probably is the exercise, but more so than that for me, it's a time to be alone. Like, it's time to actually, you can't go on your phone because you're running. You can listen to music. You're not talking to anyone. Some people might want to run with a partner and chat, and but for me it's just I don't know if I enjoy running as such. I don't know if I enjoy the actual running bit of it, but I enjoy that alone time to just kind of get out. I don't even necessarily think about anything. I just have a blank mind, and it's kind of nice.
And I think that particularly between Christmas and New Year, where you're going from one house, you know, visiting one house to the next house, and your house is kind of upside down throughout the period anyway, so there's not really respite that you find within the living room. You're also drinking quite a lot and eating quite a lot, so you feel generally a little bit sort of slovenly at that kind of period. So maybe the running is a good one for 2019.
Do you know, I have to just say as well, you might have noticed, Well, you obviously didn't because you haven't mentioned it.
You've had a haircut.
Yeah, thanks, mate. And I think there's a lot to be said about getting a haircut.
you actually wanted me to mention the fact you'd had a haircut?
Yeah. Well,
what is it like? What sort of like you have a once a year haircut?
Well, no, I mean, I know this coming from someone who like had a horrific hair this time last year, but just getting a little haircut. And do you know what? I felt great after it. I felt great walking over yesterday. I felt a couple of inches taller when I walked over yesterday. I was like, yeah. But it's the same as the running. It's just kind of taking care of yourself a little bit. That self-care is really important, whatever that might be. It doesn't have to be physical exercise.
I'm going Saturday morning for my haircut.
And do you know what? I'm going to text you that day. What time are you going to go?
First thing.
Okay, I'll text you and see how you feel.
How am I feeling? If I get any taller, I won't get through the doors. Jake Mills is with us for Mental Health Extra. Dr. Pregier's story on Mental Health Monday this week. Some really sort of, there's a million and one different things we could talk with Dr. Pregier. When we talk about the culture of stigma around mental health, actually it was interesting that she'd looked at it from an Indian culture point of view, that she even grew up thinking that mental health was a rich white person's issue or problem if it was a negative situation there. Just goes to show that actually culturally, I mean, we're talking there about, you know, the Indian culture there, but within various different cultures, we see mental health very differently and people have preconceptions about what it actually is. And it became very clear to her that her preconceptions were in fact wrong and maybe had a negative impact on the way she was able to deal with her own problems, because straight away she didn't have places to turn to because of the stigma that had come around mental health issues.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's one thing me and you sat here as two white middle class men talking about mental health and stigma and the things that we need to do to address it and change it and all the help that's available. But it's very different when you're looking at different cultures, different religions and their own kind of the take on that, and you know, there is huge stigmas within different cultures. And you know, I've gone around the country talking about my own personal journey and the work that we're doing at Chasing the Stigma and my opinion on what people should be doing to try and get help and to talk about it. And you know, you do get people from different cultures who are saying, this is literally impossible. This would be absolutely impossible for me to share this. I would be disowned by everybody. And that stigma is huge and different to what some people might think. And that's why it's really important to have that type of approach and being aware of that to kind of influence the work and the policies that are out there. I think I'm particularly passionate about almost given cultures and different communities the tools to talk within their own community. I think, you know, it might be, I'm more than happy to go and talk to different communities about mental health, but is that going to mean the same thing from me to them? So it's kind of about how we can help these different communities and cultures to engage with each other and find that support that's available for them. And you know, even within Liverpool, we know that there's a lot of support.
Because I mean, I think because there is a danger, you know, that, you know, if you came in as some sort of crusader, like, and now the white middle class man is now going to explain to you why you've been doing it wrong. I think there is like sort of a negative thing that is seen there. Yeah. And I mean, and things are different right around the world because of laws. And if you look at the way people who are gay are dealt with in different nations around the world. Now, there are gay people right around the world, but different people have different opinions about it. And people, I think, are opening their minds at different speeds as well. And it would be wrong for us, wouldn't it, to just expect everybody to go, oh, I get all this mental health stuff now, it all makes sense. Because you'll have found that even within white middle class backgrounds, there's still people who go, oh, is this even a thing?
Of course.
So it's no surprise to think that there are people who have grown up different ways, see the world in different ways, see mental health in different ways.
Yeah, of course there is. And you know, I got asked I was interviewed for something the other day, and they asked me about, do you think stigmas, you know, are we eradicating stigma? And I think we're making progress, but I think we're a long, long, long way from eradicating stigma, and especially so within different cultures as well. And as you said, never mind just in a kind of from a white middle class point of view, but from every different culture, I think it's huge. And There's a lot that needs to happen. There's a lot that needs to happen, but we do need to have this type of, these different viewpoints and voices being heard, and that's why it was really good yesterday's episode to have that viewpoint there, because it's really important. And where else is it being heard? And we all need to hear it from each other's point of views.
Dave's on Twitter. He says, Mick, every day is the start of a new year if you need it to be. Thumbs up. Good shout, Dave. Jake, I've got some New Year's reading for you. I've been sent.
You've now got the actual one.
I've got the NHS long-term plan. This is direct from the Prime Minister's office.
Well, signed.
Talking about, is it signed?
To Mick. All the best. Happy
year,
New Year.
TM. No, it isn't signed. There's a section contained within page 68 and 69 about adult mental health services. The life expectancy of people with severe mental illnesses can be up to 20 years less than the general population. An independent review of the Mental Health Act, chaired by Professor Simon Wesley, now this has been talked about for years, this one, has now made recommendations on improving legislation and practice. I think that was a number of years ago, wasn't it? It has examined rising detention rates, racial disparities in detention, and concerns that the Act is out of step with the modern mental health system. The government is now considering the findings of the review in detail. That's something that Luciana Berger has been talking about for a number of years now, including the need for better crisis service and improved care, community care for people with serious mental illness. Investment in these services forms a major part of this long-term plan. In regard to emergency mental health support, we will expand services for people experiencing a mental health crisis. 3 years ago, only 14% of adults surveyed felt they were provided with the right response when in crisis, and only half of the community teams were able to offer an adequate 24-hour, 7-day crisis service. In 2016, only 12% of hospitals' A&E departments had an all-age mental health liaison service, meeting the core 24 service standard. The NHS will ensure that a 24/7 community-based health crisis response for adults and older adults and older adults is available across England by 2020-2021. In the next 10 years, we're committed to ensuring the NHS will provide a single point of access and timely universal mental health crisis care for everybody. We will also increase alternative forms of provision for those in crisis. There's plenty more to be said on this. We don't have time to go through all of them as well. Are you at all concerned by the reference or continual reference to crisis? And maybe less of the focus around how we can improve people's overall mental health.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there will always be crisis, and you would be naive to think otherwise. But you can certainly have less crisis by early intervention, focusing on early intervention prevention. And that's exactly where the focus needs to be. Although that being said, there does still need to be improvements to the crisis support as well. I think the main thing that I would kind of add to this is that it is a positive. I think politics aside and politicians aside, from an NHS point of view and the people who have been working on this, and some of them, some of those people I know and I've spoken to, and I can vouch for them as being people who do get it, who do understand, who do care, who look at this from a joined up point of view, who want to look at different ways, and they have put a lot of work into this. And unfortunately, sometimes a lot of the time they don't get the recognition, and their hard work can be overturned by politics. And I think one of the main things that we need to be remembering here is that it can't stop here. Whatever happens in the general election, when that happens, or the one after that, this needs to have a commitment from all parties to continue this work and to make sure that the changes that they are recommending are implemented. The money that they're talking about, I think they're saying 2.3 billion in extra funding, you know, obviously is really good. But I think any idea of a parity of esteem still is a long way away.
My other thing would be that if we talk about the stigma, and we do talk about the stigma of discussing your mental health, that if everybody who suddenly had a mental health concern or problem flagged it up with their GP or the mental health services, suddenly we'd get a true sense of the picture that is out there, that there is a hidden problem, which you can add extra funding to, which might, you know, cover for a short period of time with the numbers we now know about. But if you then open that out to the population and everybody who needed help went and got it, in the same way that virtually everybody who breaks their leg goes and gets that kind of help, suddenly I think there would be a much, much sharper focusing on the finance and the need for this provision. That's not to say, you know, we pick a date in the year where everyone suddenly declares all their mental health problems, but nothing. But if you have that situation, the government would be even more sort of educated, if you like, in regards to the situation that's really out there.
Yeah, I I totally agree with you, but I would also argue that it, I don't know whether the government and the people who are in charge of this need that to happen for them to understand, because I think they probably do. They probably do realise that, they probably do know that, but because it's not happening, they can kind of get away with it a little bit. There's also a lot to be said about the kind of GPs and their side of things, and if people were to go to GP and ask for help, actually what that would look like.
But you could arguably say, you know, if you've got, you know, organisations like, you know, Me United, if you've got, you know, these drop-in cafes that are opening up as well, they could arguably go to the government and go, here are the people who maybe aren't going to a GP but are coming here instead.
Yeah.
Why don't you think about funding through us? Mm-hmm. Jason the Stigma would be a good example of this one, the Hub of Hope. Fund through us so that we can provide this, because we've already got those connections, yeah, as opposed to waiting for those people to sort of fit into the system. In many cases, they've already opened up about their mental health, but they've done it in a casual environment, a social environment with a, you know, the Kindfulness Coffee Centre or Three Little Birds or any of these organisations that we've talked about and talked to on this programme.
Yeah, and arguably that's the most powerful way of accessing those people and getting the help that they need. You know, certainly a lot of those places don't have waiting lists, and that's what we want to do through via the Hub of Hope, is to tell people about them. And I know if you said this to government now, that you would get them saying, well, that's what they're trying to look at with social prescribing, by trying to prescribe to the social activities and services that are available. But it needs to be widespread, and I've got absolutely no shred of a doubt that the Hub of Hope is the vehicle that will make social prescribing and the things that you're talking about a reality across this country, and that's what we're aiming to do.
That was a shameless plug.
I know. That's my New Year's resolution. More shameless plugs.
Jake, who makes a huge amount of money from the Hub of Hope, he finds it to be a tremendously profitable thing that he involves himself in, where for every click he earns upwards of £400. That's not the case at all.
That's not the case.
For people who in 2019 are thinking, you know what, that's something I should have done in 2018. Tell us about the Hub of Hope, how it works.
Yeah, so the Hub of Hope is a national mental health database that will make help as easy as possible to find. So we, it's an app and a website. It's a free app on Android and iOS devices. And we just basically want to make that help as easy as possible to find. So anywhere you are in the country, just press find nearby services. It will use your device's location to find the support that's near you. It's now turned into the biggest, most comprehensive mental health database in the UK, being used by the likes of Samaritans, MindCalm, Rethink Mental Illness, Papyrus, NHS Trusts, Emergency Services. You know, we've had over 100,000 page views without being able to spend a penny on advertising. We haven't advertised it anywhere. We haven't promoted it anywhere. But through word of mouth, we've helped over 25,500 unique people across the country. And it's not funded by anyone. It doesn't receive any money from anybody at all. So another shameless plug is that if anybody does have any New Year's resolutions about fundraising or any challenges they want to put themselves through, we would greatly receive any donations that anyone might have.
Jake Mills, thank you for your time. Great to see you.
Happy
New Year. I'm going to say it again. That's the last time I'm going to say it until 2020.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
On Radio City Talk.